By the powers vested in me, by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner and continue this broadcast.
I think that sets the tone for the broadcast every night, Matt.
I think it does. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
I never get tired of this song.
I know. The soothing sounds of the great Elvis Costello, Radio Radio. I'm Spike O'Neill. Welcome to Cairo Nights. As we hit the show number 777. I'm inspired by this radio station. I really am. I love the talent on this radio station. I don't agree with the talent on this radio station a lot of the times. But brilliant deliveries, brilliant broadcasters, and people who can argue. I like that. I can argue with you if you want. Text line is, it'll start right out of the gate, man. Let's bring them on. 888-973-5476. 888-973-CHIRO. See how we did that? 97.3-CHIRO. We want to make it easy for you as you're in some heated delirium of I've got your blood pressure up over 140 from some of the liberal bleeding heart, you know, socialist things I'll say tonight. So expressing my opinions of love and unity, acceptance, tolerance, inclusion,
what's
all those
so
things that are making America crumble.
That's
another one we got to get to. What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? Elvis asks the question, and I ask you. Let's start with the local stories here, Matt. Let's get the 7 o'clock hour off and running. Oh, well, as Lisa just told you, Joe Kent looks like he has pulled into second place in the primary voting for Washington's 3rd District. Six-time incumbent Jamie Herrera Butler, who voted for impeachment in the second impeachment trial of then-President Donald J. Trump, conceded the race this evening. Even though the race, if I got the latest numbers correct, there's less than 1,000 votes separating Herrera Butler and Joe Kent, but that would trigger an automatic manual or a digital recount, electronic recount of the vote. But it seems the vote, despite Kent being ready to, he had litigation ready. If he said today with Dory Monson, if this race hadn't gone the way in his favor, he had litigation ready because I guess he thought there was fraud.
Yeah, I'd be very interested to see what grounds that legislation was being readied on.
Well, I love how, you know, if I lose, I've got litigation ready to challenge the results. But since he's winning, he's happy to accept the concession of Jamie Herrera Butler. That's how it's supposed to work. When you lose an election, you concede, right? That's what then Secretary of State candidate Clinton did. If you want to look back at the history books, the day after the election in 2016, she conceded the race, even though it was a razor-thin margin. I think only 77,000 votes separated the presidential candidates in 2016. But, you know, that's what you do in America is the peaceful transition of power. You see where I'm getting with this, people? So it's going to be Joe Kent against Maria Glusenkamp Perez, the Democrat, who is actually leading all vote-getters in the primaries, but that's because the Republican vote was split. Let's be honest and realistic with ourselves. That's a very red part of the state down there. And Kent, moving on to the final November primary election, the November election in the midterms against the Democrat, Glusenkamp Perez. So it'll probably still be a red seat in Congress. It won't flip the House to, it won't be the deciding vote. A red seat will stay a red seat if Kent goes on to win that heavily red district in November. Not sure which caucus Kent will go with, the V for Vengeance caucus for, you know, they've taken out 7 of the 10 impeachment votes so far down there that Trump supported candidates have, or the Freedom from Reality caucus, which is another, I think, strong coalition in this Congress. A lot of those folks running around. Also tonight, as Lisa mentioned a moment ago, nurses at Children's Hospital are picketing. They're not on strike. Make that clear, everybody. Nurses worked hard. Nurses and first responders and so many healthcare workers, not just the doctors and nurses, the maintenance staffs, the cleanup staffs, the supply chains during the pandemic, they worked insane hours under insane conditions. And it drove that poor industry to the brink of collapse in many situations in many cities. So the nurses at Children's Hospital, who have been in contract negotiations, I've had a lot of coffee, man. I'm talking a little faster than I should probably. Contract negotiations for months, 4 months, I believe, they've been talking to management, the union for the Seattle nurses, Washington State Nurses Association. But they can't come to an agreement. And they're picketing. They were picketing this morning. They're picketing in the afternoon during drive time. They just want to raise awareness that they want an increase in pay and good working conditions, adequate staffing. You know, budgets were exploded during the pandemic, and it still continues to this day because nurses became such a premium. Doctors became such a premium. There were stories of nurses traveling around the country making literally like $40,000 a month because hospitals were so understaffed. They would pay anything to have adequate staffing to keep people alive during the pandemic when it was at its worst, when the first variants of COVID-19 were their most deadly and we didn't know what to expect. And despite the lockdowns and the masking and the vaccines and all the things we used to help combat that scourge, this global pandemic, people were dying. Over 1 million Americans perished from COVID-19. And before you tell me those numbers aren't real, you can always text the show, 888-973-5476. Before you tell me those numbers weren't real, people who died from other things were listed as COVID deaths to get money because they were paid by every COVID death they registered. I've seen that floating around the ethernets. It's not true, folks. It's not true. You know, no one was incentivized to label things COVID deaths. Yes, money was proportioned out where the deaths were most severe. So, but you can't frame it as people were getting like a scalp bounty. Every time there was a COVID death at a hospital, they got more cash. That's not how it worked. If someone has a heart condition and they catch COVID and they died from heart failure, you know, I've got a heart condition. I've had a heart attack in my life. I've got 7 stents in my heart. 3 more and I get my punch card. I get a free heart transplant. It's great. But if I have heart issues and I catch COVID and I die, I was living just fine with the heart issues and the COVID killed me. That's how that works. Anyway, the nurses want more pay. They want better work conditions, i.e. inadequate staffing. And they're not on strike because they care about this community. They're out there doing their jobs. And on their breaks, before their shift starts, even on their days off, they're picketing to raise awareness in this town for how much our nurses mean to our community, especially, and these are the nurses at Children's Hospital, and I could not speak any higher of Children's Hospital, one of the finest facilities on the face of the earth and an absolute jewel in the Northwest. Speaking of another jewel in the Northwest, we have to tell you that Marshawn Lynch was arrested at 7:30 this morning by the Las Vegas Police Department. Beast Mode was driving dirty. Beast Mode was pulled over in Las Vegas, and officers engaged Marshawn Lynch. They said he appeared to be drunk, or at least under the influence. If, you know, you've got to follow the letter of the law. He was arrested for driving under the influence and taken to the Las Vegas City Jail. 7:30 in the morning. You've got to be real drunk at 7. You're still playing last night's games at 7:30 in the morning. And, you know, no one should drive drunk. No one should boat drunk. We talked about this a little bit yesterday at this time. I love Marshawn Lynch. I love the character he is. I love his attitude. I love that he was only doing the press, so I'm only here so I don't get fined. I love the Skittles. Marshawn gave me some of the best memories of our lives, as we talked about Russell Wilson yesterday. You know, if you don't appreciate what Marshawn Lynch did for the Seahawks, gave us an identity, Beast Mode. We were the team that could do anything with that, with the defense, the LOB, Seahawks defense, and Marshawn Lynch. We did it all. We dominated the most lopsided Super Bowl in Super Bowl history, I think. Maybe the Niners had one more that was even worse. They beat up on, I think, the Broncos, of all things, too. But Marshawn Lynch arrested at 7:25 this morning for a DUI in Las Vegas. Now, Marshawn had just signed a deal, I think this week, to be a special correspondent to help produce different creative content, air quotes, for a variety of projects for the Seattle Seahawks. Marshawn was coming home. You know, after he left the Seahawks, he played a season in Vegas. With his old home team. He was from Oakland. Marshawn, born and raised in Oakland, but he played for the Oakland Raiders, I think, 2018 and 2019 season. But Marshawn will always be a Seahawk. He started as a Bill, of course, but he had his power years here. Took us to the promised land. I hope this doesn't interfere with Marshawn's ability to still be a member of the Seahawks promotion squad or whatever special correspondent. I love the commercials that he does. I love the TV spots that he does. He's got such a I don't care take on life. It's refreshing when you see athletes try to work into the arena of entertainment. Sometimes it's a grand slam home run. Sometimes it's a beast mode touchdown. Sometimes it fails miserably. But Marshawn has just such unique and genuine personality. I love seeing what he does in the entertainment arena as a special correspondent. I'd love to see him on the sidelines for the Seahawks and post game for the Seahawks, whatever it might be. I'd love to see his take on Seahawk football. And given the fact that we're picked 32nd of 32 teams in the power rankings this year, The Seahawks lose Russell and, of course, the Hall of Fame, future Hall of Famer Bobby Wagner, and it's a bunch of who's that's on the team this year. They've got talent, sure, but they're picked 32nd out of 32 teams in the NFL power rankings. Going to be some difficult moments watching Seahawks football this year. Be nice to have Marshawn around. I hope that one, I'd say bad night's decisions, but bad night slash long bad morning decisions would keep Marshawn from becoming part of the Seahawks, you know, promotional broadcast team, whatever vision they had in store for him. I hope he can still get a chance to do that. And the final story I want to talk to you about before we run out of time in this first break of the evening, it's Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill. Matt's on the board tonight. Mayor Harrell has just, let me make sure I get this story up right because there's a lot of details in this. I want to make sure I get them right. Here it is. Mayor Harrell has introduced a suite of bills to improve the cannabis equity in this town. What that means is the cannabis industry in this town. I think there's equitable distribution of cannabis as recreational and medicinal across all people in the city of Seattle. But from an equity standpoint from the cannabis industry, industry stakeholders, three bills developed in partnership with council, industry stakeholders, and workers are critical first steps toward improving equity and a clear commitment to a One Seattle approach. One Seattle approach. Mayor Harrell wants to make sure that people of communities that have been affected by the war on drugs have a chance to be a part of the financial boom that is the cannabis industry in Seattle and in the state of Washington. You know, a lot of folks are saying, and they have been since pot was legalized in the state of Washington, that it's become, you know, the rich are getting richer on marijuana. While when you look at how drug laws have been enforced, there has been a disproportionate burden. First off, if you broke the law, you broke the law. It's your fault you broke the law. But there's been a disproportionate penalization of communities of color, minorities, and the lower income people of any community. That's who tends to bear the brunt of law enforcement. That happens in so many different cases, not just in cannabis and marijuana. Well, the city has created this suite of bills, and here's some of the things they're trying to make sure happen to try to create a more equitable distribution of the benefits of having legalized cannabis in the state of Washington. Creation of a city-level social equity license intended to reduce barriers toward opening cannabis stores for underrepresented communities and those most impacted by the war on drugs. Laying the groundwork for future cannabis-related businesses in collaboration with the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board to also ensure licenses through a social equity framework, ensuring transparency to employees around ownership of cannabis stores and license holders. Requiring 90-day retention of store workforce when ownership changes is similar to a protection they put in place for the hotel industry, hotel workers back in 2019. Creation of a short-term cannabis advisory committee. That's good because you don't have much long-term memory when you're doing cannabis. So a short-term cannabis advisory committee selected in collaboration with the city council to collect input on cannabis equity and needs from workers, community members, and industry leaders. All these different things are in place to make sure that the Seattle cannabis industry and the fruits of that industry, if you will, the flower of that industry, if I may make a pun, is more equitably distributed amongst all the members of Seattle, because there has been a shorthanded way that this communities of that have been impacted by the war on drugs and communities of less opportunity haven't had a chance to get into the cannabis game. So the mayor's stepping up. He realizes that Seattle's going to, you know, Seattle brings in a lot of cash from the cannabis industry. I'm not sure Matt, you did some research pre-show and had a number for the state. How much revenue was generated in the state last year?
It was $595.5 million in 2021. That's from the Liquor and Cannabis Board. That's how much money Washington made off legalized pot.
$500 million in legalized pot last year. And I know that money goes to the general fund, if I'm not mistaken, so that the city can use it to do what it needs to do in the way of funding schools or funding whatever it might be. The general fund is just that, a general fund. You know, some folks are thinking that marijuana has been a bad thing for the city. There are parts of town that are, you know, there are zones where marijuana stores can operate. There, of course, you can't have them close to schools. I think churches, there's a limit on where you can put a marijuana store in Seattle. But there was a real disparity of who got to be license holders. I remember when marijuana was introduced to the state of Washington, there were a set number of licenses. And, like, they had a lottery to see who would get the right to buy these licenses. And then once those initial amount of licenses were bought up, there were no more. They weren't going to expand. They knew how much they should have, where they could put these stores around the city of Seattle or the state of Washington, where they wouldn't be in the wrong place, keep them in business districts away from children and, you know, as you should. But then when you wanted to get into the game, you had to buy an existing license. And the price, because there was a limited amount, price kept going up and up and up and up and up. And that's why these communities of color, I was going to say these colored communities, but that's not the way to phrase that, respectfully. These communities of color, communities impacted by the war on drugs, they couldn't get in the game. So I think this is a good thing the mayor has done, giving everybody a chance to get into the game, spread some of the wealth. You know, I'll make this equation that that's one of the reasons that the Native American communities were given the ability to have casinos. Because you can't argue the fact that the Native American communities, the indigenous communities of not just Washington but of America, kind of got a raw deal. Kind of hard to say anybody could argue against that. But then giving those communities, that portion of our society, the ability to get back in the game by owning casinos. And it's amazing what some of our local tribes have done with the proceeds from their casino efforts. You know, improvements in infrastructure, in education, in healthcare for the members of those communities. Hopefully, this effort by the mayor to make sure that the equity is distributed, the benefits of the cannabis industry are distributed equitably across the communities, will help those communities also improve their own healthcare, their own infrastructure, their own educational needs. Because let's admit, they've been left behind a lot of times. So good. Way to go, Mayor Harrell. Way to go, bud. Like you more already. Voted for you. Like you more already. It's Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill. We've got a lot scheduled tonight, folks. Had a lot of fun last night. Going to have a lot more fun tonight. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after these.
This hour of Cairo Nights is brought to you by Beacon Plumbing, Heating, and Mechanical.
Good evening. Welcome to Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill, 734. The text line is 888-973-5476. And I've told you since we got here that if you disagree with me, I'll listen to your opposing point of view and respect that. And boy, was I getting this right out of the gate. I've enjoyed watching Marshawn Lynch play football. I appreciate what he's done as an athlete. I hate to see people's lives ruined by a mistake, but drinking and driving is a serious offense. And I got blasted by the texters to Cairo about giving Marshawn a pass on a DUI and hoping he still gets to keep his job with the Seahawks because he's a celebrity. Fair enough. That's a legitimate point of view. I take DUI very seriously. I've never lost anyone to a DUI. I've never had anyone that I love in my life killed by a drunk driver. And there are folks out there who have. And they feel completely differently about Marshawn Lynch and having a DUI in Vegas this morning at 7:35 in the morning. Still no details about the story coming out, so we'll get more as it comes out. We'll find out exactly what happened. But drinking and driving is a serious and dangerous thing to do. And there should be a price to pay. I'm not saying Marshawn Lynch shouldn't pay a price. My thoughts are only that I've enjoyed the guy's work. I like his fresh take on the way he interacts as a media member than most pro athletes. And I hope that one mistake doesn't derail the opportunity for me to enjoy more of him as an entertainer. That was my point. I appreciate your opposing viewpoints. 888-973-5476. Talk now about working from home. Because of COVID, we all had to be remote for a better part of a year. Some of us, some of the essential workers, like the healthcare workers we mentioned last half hour, grocery store workers, of course, first responders, so many people that worked to help get all of us through the global pandemic, didn't have a chance to work from home, but a lot of people did. A lot of offices shut down. This building had folks broadcasting from home for a long time. A lot of people did that. You see on network news how the in-studio guests are now broadcasting from their living room. People want to look smart, so they put a whole wall of books behind them when they're speaking. It'd be a big backdrop of the city, whatnot. Is it better for us to work from home? There's an article by Malcolm Gladwell, who's a pretty well-known CEO-type writer, smart guy by most accounts. Some of you think he's a moron, I'm sure. Said that working from home just doesn't work for most environments. There's a sense of camaraderie, sense of collaboration. that is missing when people don't come to work in an office. Last year, I worked for a different broadcast company in the television side of things, in the sales side of things, and we were working from home for most of the pandemic. But there was a point where management wanted everybody back in the office to have that collaboration, to have that sense of teamwork, to have that sense of, you know, just human contact. So how do you feel about it? Is working from home good for you? Are you better off working from home? A lot of people think we couldn't work from home. We couldn't be trusted to work from home. That was the knock on remote workers prior to the pandemic. People couldn't be trusted to put in a full 8 hours if they were home, you know, wearing business up from the waist up and pajama bottoms and fluffy slippers the rest of the day, you know, just sitting around the house. But we learned it. We adapted. We learned how to do Zoom calls, team calls, whatever it might be, FaceTime each other. And people learned how to be productive working from home. And you got to admit, less commuting traffic during the pandemic was kind of nice. Less people on the road because a portion of the workforce was not going to work every day. Is there a nice hybrid blend between being at work and working from home?
When you calculate the environmental impact, the traffic impact, if you're not in the trades or if you're not a person who actually has to manufacture something or go out to clients, there is simply a lot of time and energy wasted in commuting. And a lot of jobs probably should be work from home jobs. This just accelerated it.
That's true. I think it did. But I think it's a good thing. I think that the lightening the load around the commuting would be wonderful for all of us. It'd be nice if 25% of the commuters didn't have to go to work on a daily basis. I mean, we're already growing faster than they can build new infrastructure around here.
Exactly.
We're a city that's limited geographically by how much roadway we can put in place, how wide we can make our freeways. Get into the great cities of Phoenix and the Southwest where it's wide open land everywhere. They've built amazing wide 8-lane highway systems and people just zip around. You're never going to have that here. It's always going to be as wide as it is right now on I-5, moving through the city of Seattle, through the lake. So you've got to do something about commuting. Light rail's behind the times. It'd be nice if we could get people to work from home more often. And people can be productive. You know, you can get up, do your work, take a break, go walk to the fridge, make a sandwich, go back to work.
Now, in the case of our business, it can be efficient for show prep when you're just needing to read and digest information, but the energy for radio is not the same as being in studio. Certain jobs, particularly I think media and entertainment jobs, do require a level of in-person and being able to play off the coworkers and exchange ideas and dialogue. So it doesn't work for all businesses by any means.
Not at all. I mean, like there's the texter, Carlos worked for KFC and the DQ.
Nice.
Throughout the whole pandemic, because fast food workers were very essential. You know, folks weren't getting out to do restaurants. Most restaurants had to convert to either carry out or close their doors.
Mm-hmm.
But folks have relied on fast food workers. Folks relied on the industry, the grocery industry to get us through the pandemic. That's why there was emergency funding for grocery workers. And that just recently ended as the pandemic's emergency proclamations were ended as well. Some people actually like to commute. They enjoy their commute. They use that time to reflect, to take in news in the mornings. You know, I was working in Portland for a whole year, and I had a 2-hour and 40-minute commute twice a week. I kind of enjoyed it. You know, I'd listen to books on tape. I'd listen to the news. I'd listen to good music that I liked to get me fired up. And it was kind of me time, isolation time, you know, just a little self-help time.
It gave you some personal space.
Yeah, well, yeah. And in these days, the pandemic was plenty of personal space. When you're locked down with your family for 2 years plus, you really could use some personal space. So
along came the cure to introversion, COVID.
Got a tattoo artist on the text line. I can't work from home. It wouldn't be Santa. That's true. I mean, some industries do not lend themselves to working from home.
Yeah.
But some do. I think maybe we should find a nice healthy balance of work from home and work from the office or the business or the tattoo parlor.
Remember, though, how commercial real estate was considered such a sound investment? And now, because so much is hollowing out and they've realized, hey, we don't need this much space to run this business, that's upended that market completely.
Yeah, but I read a story that commercial spaces are being revamped and they're becoming more spacious. You know, we had to have these restrictions when COVID was so unknown and so prevalent everywhere that you couldn't have people so close together. You had to spread people out.
Right, 6 feet apart.
That helped. you know, you had a third of the workers coming in, but they used the whole space that you used to have 50 workers in. So we find, they'll find a way. I mean, good businesses always find a way. So we'll see if we can find our way through this. If working from home can be part of your life, would you like to work a 4-day work week? Four tens as opposed to a 5 8-hour day work week?
Again, in this business, I'm still trying to figure out how that would work for people who are on air, because you have regular shows that you do X number of days a week, and then to suddenly stop, that would just be odd to me.
You'd have to work from home. Some jobs won't lend themselves to remote. Some jobs won't work lend themselves to 4-day work weeks as opposed to 5-day work weeks.
I got to work the 5 days.
Yeah. I've got a cousin who worked 4 tens his entire career. You know, never saw a Friday at work. You know, a lot of people would take that in a heartbeat. What if you had half the staff come in Monday through Thursday, half the staff come in, or the appellant staff come in Tuesday through Friday, have your one day off a week float through? You could have 20% less employees in the parking lot, 20% less employees on the commute every day. I think it would be a great way to handle space and commute times and congestion on the freeways, pollution from the cars. Be nice. We can find a way to do it. That's the thing about us. We're adaptable. We learn and we grow and we overcome obstacles. We can find a way to work remotely and make it better for everybody. Some folks miss being in the office, want to come back to work. You mentioned how the vibe of a newsroom. I love it in here. I love being part of watching the Cairo News reporters and investigators out in the researchers out in the bullpen, I think they call it. I don't know what they call it. I'm new here. I did rock radio for 30 years. I love the vibe around here. I don't know how you can do this job from not being here in the studio.
This has been one of the best office, quote-unquote, environments I've worked in ever. The people here are great. I love coming in, talking with everybody, hearing what's trending in the news, different host perspectives. It's a lot of fun to be here.
I agree. And we're going to talk about something next hour as well of course, the whole country's talking about. We're going to talk about what happened yesterday in Florida at Mar-a-Lago and the historical impact of a former president having an FBI raid, and whether or not that raid was justified, whether it was politicized, whether it was warranted, how the take of that has been completely tribally polarized, one side versus the other. Two people, I can't believe we're in the same planet the way these two sides are looking at yesterday's historic event. But it happened, and we'll talk about it next. This is Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill. Thanks for being here. We'll be right back after these. Love music, don't we?
That we do. I love classic soul music too. It's one of my favorite things.
This, of course, same old song. This is a Motown classic, and it was written by a gentleman we just lost at the age of 81, Lamont Dozier. Lamont Dozier. Part of a songwriting team. There were dozens of hits for the Supremes, Marvin Gaye, Four Tops, many others. His son announced his passing on Instagram. And you know, I don't know if you know how the music industry works. Bands make money, but songwriters make the bulk. Most of the money in music is in publishing. The bands Rolling Stones, whatever, the Beatles, any good band. The people who write the music make the bulk of the money. Most of the bands are they're not session players for the most part in good bands with good dynamics. But we lost a true genius as a songwriter. In Lamont Dozier, wrote for the Four Tops, Marvin Gaye, the Supremes.
14 Billboard number ones.
14 number. Wow, that's amazing. And you probably, I didn't know his name until today when he passed. That's terrible. I feel bad about that.
Martha and the Vandellas, the Isley Brothers. He wrote a lot of great songs.
So he wrote Heatwave.
Yes.
For Martha and Vandellas, their only hit. What other music you got from him? Play us some of his music tonight.
All right, here's one I think a lot of people are going to remember. How sweet it is to be loved by Marvin Gaye. Yes,
Lamont Dozier was the reason they called Motown Hitsville, USA. I want to play so much of his music to pay tribute to this brilliant writer and this amazing man. But it's hard to stop one of them once you start. They're so good.
So many classics. Like, not just to write a ton of songs, but to be a part of so many big songs that still last so many years, so many decades after they were hits.
And Motown was really groundbreaking more so than just the music, than what it meant to a culture. You know, to the African-American community in America, that they had Motown. You know, because they, at that point in time, in the 50s and 60s, weren't included in a lot of American culture. The African-American community really had to fight their way in. But they had Motown.
And brought so much of that music forward onto Top 40 radio and brought it into such a broader audience because those songs broke through and were
right,
massive.
Exactly. White kids dancing to this music.
Mm-hmm.
That's how crossed over, that was initial. Some of the greatest crossover was music. Give me another one. If you could, Matt. Unbelievable. Lamont Dozier also wrote Stop in the Name of Love, You Keep Me Hanging On, How Sweet It Is to Be Loved by You, Nowhere to Run,
Bernadette.
14 number one hits. Amazing career. He has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, but so does Carrot Top, so it's not saying much. Lamont Dozier at the age of 81.
What a legacy of great songs.
Great, 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 great writing legacy. Our condolences to his families, and maybe we'll play some more of his music as we go throughout the course of the night. This is Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill. Matt's on the board. These are the beautiful words of the late Lamont Dozier.